I'm Scott Martin with the Wall Street Reporter. Today we're talking to Dr. Joe Duarte. He's the founder of the In the Money Options Service. It bears his name. He's a biotech analyst and an authentic MD. Joe, how are you today? Thanks for being with us.
I basically look at the market as I look at life through a set of principles in an emerging science called complexity. And that, you know, I don't want to make that complicated for people. It talks about how things are organized in systems, and systems are either stagnant, they're going nowhere, or they are complex, which is when they are at their finest or most efficient, or when they are chaotic. And chaotic, of course, means that they're predictably unpredictable and that you really don't know what's going to happen next. And it so happens that right now we're at that chaotic point, possibly because of this coronavirus, which is really making things very, very unpredictable on a daily basis.
Okay, I like that a lot. I like it because, you know, a couple of things. The first is chaos isn't necessarily bad, and I get the feeling you're hearing opportunities here too.
Well, there are always opportunities. And so two of the things that we're looking at right now on my website, Joe Duarte in the money options.com, is what companies are well positioned for something like this. And one of them, of course, is Gilead Sciences, which is a biotech company that could have a drug or two that could help with the coronavirus. And of course, that's very, very squishy, for lack of a better term, because, you know, there are some clinical trials and things going on, but it seems like the Chinese government is running them instead of Gilead, so it's kind of hard to know what's going on with that. But another one, which I recommended recently as well, is called Emergent Biosystems, and the symbol for that one is E as in Edward, B as in Boy, and S as in Sam. And that stock is doing quite well, especially since they beat their earnings. But they're the other virus company. You know, they have vaccines for smallpox and vaccines for other viral things and bioterrorism things like anthrax. And so you have to start looking at companies like that. You know, and I'm looking at the ticker right now, and EBS is up like $5 this morning.
Wow.
Because they beat their earnings. I mean, I recommended that stock last weekend. So you have to be able to look through the chaos if that's where you are and try and see what might be working or not.
Nice. So I think, yeah, Gilead's been dead money for 5 years. So now is the time to catch the turn on that, I guess.
Well, you know, Gilead's been dead money for sure. And it's very, well, it's very interesting that it has been dead money because, you know, it owns the franchise for HIV. You know, they're 80% of the HIV medication market. And, you know, they created Tamiflu, which is the flu pill, you know. And, but, you know, markets work the way they work. So, but, you know, Gilead, you know, again, they might do something here. If they can deliver something good, I think it wouldn't just be a good thing for the stock, but it would be a good thing for humanity. So.
I like that. Yeah, good things for the world, usually good things for the stocks in the long run. Just going back to the biotech because, you know, that dead money thing. I'm sorry to keep harping on it. I'm just so frustrated with Gilead and the rest of the big biotechs. Was it just simply that they had succeeded and I guess your emergent system, you know, they built their markets, they won their markets, and then there wasn't anything left for them in the near term, so all the hot money went elsewhere?
I think you're right in a way with that. You know, biotech, unfortunately, and I wrote a biotech book many years ago called Successful Biotech Investing. And the book got mixed reviews because, you know, I didn't come up with the silver bullet that people were looking for. But the fact is, biotech is all about, you know, is the FDA going to approve your drug and are you going to be able to make billions off of it until somebody can come up with a generic? I mean, that's all there's to it from a market standpoint. You know, unfortunately, in real life, you know, or fortunately, it's all about cures or failures. But in the market, you know, people that bet on these things are only looking at the blockbuster potential. And you know, biotech really hadn't delivered that many blockbusters until the last couple of years with the cancer drugs. But, you know, it turns out the big pharma companies sucked up all the good biotech cancer companies, and so the big pharma's been making all the money from the cancer drugs.
So we're kind of right back where we were, where there's a flatline universe, a landscape. Big pharma did eat all the good oncology, and the little guys are still a couple years out from that big binary catalyst, which is still 50-50 right, maybe at best.
Unless, you know, big pharma buys you up now and finally finishes the job and delivers, and big pharma, you know, again makes a profit. So biotech has always been hit and miss, and you know, people didn't particularly like that approach, but that was the truth when I researched it. So
that is the truth, that you roll with those dice and it's blockbuster or nothing.
Yes, sir.
I think with the M&A thing, just to get one last hit on that, do you think that big pharma is getting a little bit more risk hungry, and so they will take over these little companies, or are they still staying mostly clean, but like let the little guys do all the work?
Well, I think there's this part of that, but you know, because of the way the healthcare system is structured now, that insurance companies don't really want to pay large sums of money for drugs unless the drugs are really proven to be effective. I think you're going to see a lot more of big pharma, you know, looking through the weeds to try and find anything they can get so they can get blockbusters and make money in the current system. So I think the only way a biotech company is that's really small these days is going to ever be successful is in hopes that they get bought by a big one.
Okay, that's the exit. You're not going all the way. Well, I think that's, you know, I would love to talk more about that, but I know that you're in options land, and so that's a great way that a lot of our audience don't really know how they can, you know, get a little bit of leverage on these huge binary stories and ride the swings. I guess you've been watching that with Gilead. Gilead's up, and Emergent BioSolutions is up $5 today. I bet your people are making a lot more than $5 on that stock today.
Well, you know, the problem with EBS and the options is they're so thinly traded that you have to be very careful, because you might pick the stock correctly, you might pick the timing correctly, and then you buy an option and nothing happens. You know, and that's kind of the problem with the smaller stocks like EBS. Gilead, on the other hand, you know, the options are much more liquid. So if you pick your spot correctly, you've done well. And we did very well here initially on Gilead. We owned a Gilead call option when all this stuff was starting to happen. In a couple of weeks, you know, we almost doubled our money. And we got out, and sure as heck, as the fever, you know, died down, then of course, the option, has also been a lot more quiet. But it's more about for options, it's more about liquidity than anything else these days, you know, because you have all these, you know, all this artificial intelligence, all these algorithms that are always there waiting for you. Yeah, waiting for you. And so, you know, it has to be really a really solid, very liquid option. You know, by the same token, you know, if you had a stock that has had a big run, you know, and you can certainly, and it's starting to form a nice sideways consolidation pattern, you know, you can always sell a call option and get a nice income for a while you wait for the stock to pick up or do whatever it's going to do next. So in this type of market that we've had, which is, you know, unnatural, just goes up and up and up because of the artificial stuff, you know, you have to be very cautious about liquidity. If something's not liquid, even if you're right, you're not likely to make a big bunch of money.
So you're not just looking for the entries. You always have an eye on the exit, always.
Every time. And you know, a lot of people, you know, I was just at the Money Show a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about this. And options people, you know, they're always looking for the big payoff, which, of course, is what we're all looking for. But they ignore that liquidity thing, and a lot of people are starting to ignore the underlying stocks behavior. And simple things like, you know, implied volatility, historical volatility, all the things that you really should look at before you make an options trade. And so, you know, people are not getting, you know, a lot of them were complaining, well, you know, I was right, I got this great stock, and nothing happened. Well, did you look at the did you look at the liquidity and all those things? So.
Wow. So there's a lot going on with that, too. I'm just going through the math. So they're just looking, because they're purely looking at the contracts. You know, and this like goes against everything I was ever taught. They're just looking at the contracts. They're not looking at how far the stock can move, where that implies the contract can move. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking day by day.
Yeah.
And so one way or another, you will be forced out. You know, you're either going to have to pay up or go home.
Right. And again, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't look at the delta and all those things, but you should look at the underlying stock, you know, and if you have an option, you know, that has, you know, traded three contracts in the last 2 months, even though the stock looks great, you probably shouldn't do anything with that option, you know. And, you know, for example, I'm looking right now at Gilead Sciences, and, you know, the options volume is very healthy. You know, some of these expiration dates, you know, have 5,000 contracts that have traded today. Others have like 10,000, 11,000. You know, that's the kind of liquidity you're looking at. You know, meanwhile, something like EBS, you know, if you look at that, the same kind of thing. You know, I've got the March 20 that has traded a total of 60 contracts in all of the expiration dates. You know, that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, here's a stock that went up, that's up $5-6, and if you pick the wrong expiration date, you went nowhere, you know?
Yikes.
So, and the spreads, you know, the spreads are very wide in some of these things. You know, I'm looking at one that has 27 contracts, and the bid and ask is 155-260. I mean, how are you going to get to that?
That's never going to close. So it sounds like the algorithms have not found that stock yet, and that's okay.
Yeah, well, you buy the stock, you know, and you do what you can with that, you know. So you want to gravitate toward liquidity and options is really the bottom line.
So it sounds to me like we're getting a kind of tier of risk and almost like a landscape where you've got obviously the illiquid options, crazy money, you know, baby stocks. Then you move down, and at some point, the equity in the contract, it's a trade off of short money, long money. Where are you going to go? Short term,
right?
Yeah.
And it all boils down to liquidity. You want to be in the options contracts that are liquid, and certainly you want to do all your homework. You want to look at the underlying stock and all the things I've talked about earlier. But you know, at the end of the day, if you don't have liquidity, then you're really not going to be in the best place you could be.
I like that. Know the stock first. And you know biotech, and I think you know the market too. Where are we going? I mean, is this the market crash coming up? Is this the bubble? Do things look too hot to you right now?
Well, you know, here's the thing. We're in a totally different environment than we had been. You know, one of the things I talked about in my money show talk, I recommend people go at Money Show and punch up Joe Duarte and look at my talk. It's about 40 minutes. But even if they only look at the first, I'm sorry?
Oh, we'll link right to that. So,
yeah.
If you listen, we'll let you know. Yeah.
Even the first 15 minutes of it are just give you a nice background on all these things. But basically where we are in the market right now is that, and I look at the advanced decline line as my number one indicator, the New York Stock Exchange advanced decline line. Since Trump got elected, that indicator has not given a false signal. And that's remarkable, you know, because in the past I followed that indicator and it was always good, but not like it has been over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And what it's saying right now is that we are very, very vulnerable. And what I always do is I put moving averages on the advanced decline line as if it was an index. And
oh, cool.
Anytime that line has fallen below the 50-day moving average convincingly. It has been a very difficult market over the next few weeks. And it's only happened twice. I think it was February 2018 and then in October. And, you know, remember October 2019 when we had a bear market, basically 20% down in a couple of months? That was a beautiful advanced decline signal. And so now the advanced decline line is starting to be very volatile. And if it takes out that 50-day moving average, I think we're going to be in for a pretty uncomfortable period of time.
Wow. So let me say that back so I make sure I understand. So Brett has lost support.
And momentum. Because, you know, I put the ROC oscillator on it as well. And the most recent high in the advanced decline line was not confirmed by the ROC, or the rate of change indicator. And I also put RSI on it. And again, RSI looks a lot, very, very waffly, for lack of a better word. So I think the advanced decline line has now lost momentum. And a lot depends on, you know, what the Federal Reserve and the central banks do. You know, if the Fed pulls away the liquidity that they've put in the system of late, look out below. Because this market is all about liquidity now. And if the Fed pulls the liquidity out, we're going to be in big trouble because we've already lost momentum.
Okay. And, I mean, the inflation targets aren't what Powell wants it to be, so I don't think we're going to get any more cuts.
No,
it take for them to raise, yeah.
Well, they don't have to, you know, again, that's kind of, for lack of a better word, I look at this thing in terms of 1987 versus 2020. In 1987, people ran the markets, right?
Yeah.
And now the servers run the market.
Oh,
So an interest rate cut in 1987 was a lot more meaningful than an interest rate cut in 2020, especially when you got really low rates. So it's more about, you know, how much money is the Fed putting in the system, regardless of the interest rate. So if they turn off the faucet on liquidity at this point, which is the market is very vulnerable. And, you know, I look at things, too, in terms of the market, the economy, and people's lives together. You know, I look at that. I call that the MEL system, M-E-L, you know, because everything's so interconnected. You know, the markets and, you know, through the 401k plan, everybody looks at their 401k plan. If it's doing well, they go out and buy stuff. You know, that's where they make their life decisions based on their 401k plan. So anything that disturbs that, you know, that loop is
wow.
Going to be, yeah, everything happens quick now. You know, it used to take 6 months for something to happen in the economy after it happened in the market. Everybody got social media now. I tell you, I had a lady at the Money Show. She comes up to me and she starts asking me questions. So I'm talking to her and she says, excuse me a second. You know, this is a 75-year-old lady, I think, okay? She's looking at her quotes on her phone. I got to go. I just got an alert.
Wow.
So,
that's a story. I love that.
So, you know, the three things are connected, the markets, the economy, and life. And if one of those three legs falters, the other two are going to likely follow. And I think it's all being held together now by the Fed's liquidity. If they drain liquidity, look out below.
Okay, that's not a tagline I want you to end on, so I'm going to keep you talking. Try to find some hope in that. No, it's sobering. I know we get through these things, but if it's just simply a matter of so the algorithms aren't even slicing and dicing the percentages. You know, this isn't a basis point issue. It's just simply the money is turned on full speed or it's not, and feast or famine. That we are humans, and we trade our guts a lot of the time still. Can we how do we get the computer to work for us? Do we buy the tech stocks? Do we play around them, make them dance?
Well, here's the thing. Number one, look at the advanced decline line. If the advanced decline line is acting well, then the odds are in your favor.
Okay?
Cool.
So that's right there, big picture. Second is, you know, do frequent scans and look for charts, you know, price charts that look favorable. And by that, I usually mean stocks that are in the sweet spot. Okay, and the sweet spot to me is when a stock is just about above its 200-day moving average after it's taken a beating. You know, it's made that ground turn, and it's convincingly above that 200-day moving average. That's what I call the sweet spot. That's what I call the complexity zone, where things are, you know, are at their most efficient. That's where I try to look to buy stocks. And believe it or not, there are some stocks that are still sort of in that general area. You know, I wouldn't rush out and buy them today, but, you know, I'd make a shopping list, you know, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm making my shopping list, you know, companies that are kind of in that general area. And when things turn around, and I think they will, and they will turn rapidly because the machines do everything fast, you know. So you just want to be ready. You know, so can things get bad right now? Sure they can. Are things going to get better? Of course they will. It's a matter of just being prepared. So that's how you make the machines work for you. You know what they're doing. You just have to, you know, pick your spot and resign yourself to the fact that you can't beat them, but you can certainly join them. You know, and because when stocks take off, they take off because the machines go all in. And so that's what we have to do now.
So it's really like waiting for a bus. Be the best human you can be, and sooner or later something faster is going to come on this road.
And just get on and ride it as long as it's, you know, it's safe to ride.
and you always know where that the door is. You can jump anytime. Who's on your screen right now? Anyone you can tell me about?
I'm looking at Gilead Sciences right now, believe it or not.
Cool.
You know? And, you know, I've been looking at EBS all day long. Those are the two things that I'm mostly focused on. Gilead's doing fairly well. And, you know, EBS is kind of consolidating right now. You know, it's up like $4.50. It's been up like $6 all day. But, you know, I think both those stocks have some upside.
Very cool. So you're not chasing everything. You pick your spots and you pick post to home.
Yeah, and right now, one of the things I've been telling my subscribers over the last couple of 3 weeks is, you know, it's best to have taken profits, and we were fortunate to have some profits on some stocks that did well for us, and just to focus on having some cash, having it ready to go. And I think that selling this market short is very dangerous because of the potential for it to turn around quickly. I mean, think about this, right? It's possible that clinical trial that they're running in China turns out to be positive. Well, what do you think that's going to do, right? If the market is likely to turn around nicely, you know? And you know, if you're short, you're going to get wiped out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's it's a lot better to have the cash. Take the exit, take the percentage points, stay liquid, go home. Stay alive, fight again tomorrow.
Cash is better than right now.
Cash is, it's always pretty good, but right now there's nothing better. Do you ever look at the FANGs? Because I know they're always up and down.
Well, I like to look at Amazon once in a while because, you know, it's where money goes, you know. And I had a fellow at the Money Show talk to me about Amazon options, you know. I personally don't trade Amazon options, and I don't trade the stock because it's too rich for me. I'm old fashioned. I don't like to pay, you know, $2,000 for a stock, and I don't like to pay, you know, $800 for an option, you know. But, you know, if you can apply those same principles that I talked about earlier. And more than anything else, what I always tell people is, get very comfortable with, you know, 10, 20, 30 stocks. Learn their characteristics and you know, learn what they do in general to what the market does. And it's a lot better to have that core to go to when you're ready to trade than to always be looking for the next big thing. Certainly you want to expand your horizons and you want to look for stocks that are going to pop. But if you have a good core of 20 or 30 stocks, and Amazon happens to be one of them, and you can trade them successfully, I think that's terrific.
Cool. It's just it's not your portfolio, and that's okay. Pick your spots again. Let the action come to you.
Yes, sir.
Well, I like that a lot, and that's how you stay alive. Because otherwise, you got hot stock today, going tomorrow.
On live to trade another day.
That's all it takes. Keep that money rolling. Last note for you before I ask you for your final thoughts. Speaking of hot stocks, any comment on Tesla?
Tesla is another one of those stocks that's like Amazon, except it's a real cult stock, you know?
Okay.
And so you again, if that's the one that you are really good at, then by all means do it. You know, I'm looking at a Tesla chart right now. You know, it's clearly overextended. It's a company that I consider, you know, difficult to dissect, okay? I mean, they're not making any money, and I don't know that they will ever make any money, but they sure sell a lot of cars, you know? And they have a lot of influence and a lot of backing in the market. So it's like anything else. Would I buy puts on Tesla right now? You almost want to, don't you? I mean,
I hear where this is going. Yeah, but if it's not my stock, I got my own stocks.
Yeah, if you, I mean, looking at that chart, you're just, dang, I really want to buy it. But yeah, one of the things I look at is unbalanced volume, and unbalanced volume on Tesla is powering higher, which means money is still going in. So, you know, if you look at the chart without the indicators, you're going to say, well, yeah, man, this thing's got to crash sooner or later. But if you look at the underlying stuff, money's still going into Tesla. So, you know, I'm not sure I would be – well, I certainly wouldn't be buying puts on it right now.
Well, sooner or later, we'll kill you sooner or later. So that's
not
good. I like a lot of that because what I'm hearing there is there's dips you can and cannot buy, and there's peaks that you can and cannot short, and this one can go higher.
Yeah, it can. Believe it or not, it looks like it can. Yes.
I heard $7,000 is the target on that the other day. But, well, on that happy note, any last thoughts, anything that you want to tell us that we haven't gotten to?
I think the most important thing for people is to understand what the market's all about these days. And I think that for me, it's liquidity. And anything that disrupts liquidity won't be good for the market. By the same token, coronavirus, you know, that's the big ugly thing out there. And we don't really know how it's going to work out. But if something positive develops, then a lot of things will probably get better than people are thinking they are right now.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, I hope to talk to you again about it soon. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
We'll put those links on the site, so just click around. You're going to find this man. Thank you again.
Great, thanks. Bye.